Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, depending on what time zone you're joining us from, and welcome to today's webinar, Briefing Unpacking Your ISO 27001-2022 Transition Strategy. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer technical support to our speaker. Today, we're welcoming back a returning special guest, Alan Calder of IT Governance Limited, and I'll be introducing you all to Alan very shortly here. But without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our speaker today, Alan Calder. Alan is an internationally acknowledged cybersecurity expert and a leading author on information security and IT governance issues. He's the founder and executive chairman of IT Governance Limited, a single source provider of cyber risk and privacy management solutions. Alan co-wrote the Definitive Compliance Guide, IT Governance and International Guide to Data Security and ISO 27001/ISO 27002 with the help of Steve Watkins. And this is the basis for the UK Open University's postgraduate course on information security. So Alan literally co-wrote the book on the topic, which we love to see. He's also written a number of other popular books on ISO 27001 and the EU's GDPR, including the popular EU General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, an implementation and compliance guide, which provides a clear and comprehensive guide to the regulation, while setting out obligations of data processors and controllers. Alan, welcome back to one of our webinars. It's always great to have you on, and I'm going to hand things over to you so you can get started.
Great. Thank you, Amy, and nice to have you back. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to be talking to you about ISO 27001-2022, and I expect there'll be some of you who are looking at implementing ISO 27001 for the first time, and others who will be looking at transitioning from a management system which has already been certified or registered to ISO 27001-2013. So this webinar will address both of your requirements. As a business, IT governance, we've been at this for some 20 years. So before the version for ISO 27001, we've been clients now, about 12,000 of them across six different continents to help them implement cyber risk and governance solutions, many of them built around ISO 27001. We've probably got the most comprehensive products and service offering around ISO 27001 to help organizations prepare for certification. As Amy said, I've been at this as well as the company being at it for a long time, written a lot, and I hope that what I've captured in talking to many clients, working with many clients, and in the various books is useful in this webinar in terms of helping you all get to grips with the idea of how you're going to make an ISO 27001 2013 to 2022 transition. Probably got some questions. As Amy said, please do don't lose them, put them into the chat function. We'll answer them as we come to the end of the webinar. But I'm probably going to run for about 30 minutes or so in terms of starting with the changes introduced by ISO 27001. The new standard was published after something like about 18 months worth of development on October the 25th last year. It almost looked like a damn squib because the number of changes to the standard itself, to the clauses 4 through 10, weren't that dramatic. There'd been, through the various drafts, a range of more dramatic changes suggested that were then taken out. A number of very practical changes were left in, as you'll see. And the most dramatic changes were to Annex A, because Annex A, of course, reflects ISO 27002, which did go through very substantial changes and was published earlier than ISO 27001. The most recent version of the ISO standard was published in 2013. That replaced a version published in 2008, and that replaced a version published in 2003. And the original versions were a British standard back in about 1997 to 1999. So it's had a lot of evolution. The international evolution of management standards means that There's a lot of experience of organizations who have been certified goes into the revisions of the standard, as do the views and experiences of expert panels around the world. So every new iteration of the brings a set of improvements that reflect real world requirements of organizations. And ISO 27001:2022 does bring a number of specific changes, not very wide ranging changes, but specific changes in terms of the way that organizations are expected to manage information security. Welcomed as a standard, more for the changes to Annex A and the way those reflect ISO 27002 than just for the changes in the clauses 4 through 10 of the management standard itself. Before I go into those, let me just talk briefly about the transition timetable. Accreditation bodies, and this is the timetable set by the International Accreditation Federation, the IAF. Accreditation bodies, there's one for every single country that belongs to the IAF, have 6 months from the end of the month in which the standard was published to come up with a certification scheme or an amendment to the certification scheme for for certification bodies within their scope. So they have to have produced a scheme logically, therefore, by the end of April 2023. All certification bodies must transition to the new standard within 18 months of it being published. That means by the end of April 2024, and certification to ISO 27001:2022 must begin no later than the 31st of October this year. The reality is that many certification bodies will be ready to deal with certification before that, but what the IAF is saying is that by no later than October of this year, all certification bodies must be in a position to handle certification or registration, depending on which word you prefer, to ISO 27001. All organizations that have an ISO 27001:2013 management system must complete their transition and have a new certificate by the 31st of October 2025. In other words, that's 3 years after the standard itself was published. So there's a substantial. What that means is that you could start implementing a management system that complies with the ISO 27001:2013 if you wanted to, knowing that you have lots of time to transition to the 2022 standard in due course. And there are some commercial logical reasons why you might want to do that, including the fact that there's an awful lot of products and services, skills and competences in place around 2013, and there's only a small limited number of organizations like ourselves and Perry Johnson who are already ready to deal with ISO 27001:2022. But it's a kind of commercial decision for you to make. But that's an overview of the transition timetable. Let me talk now about some of the changes to the standard. I'm going to break that up into two areas of discussion. The first is the standard itself. ISO 27001:2022 has the clauses you have to comply with, the clauses 4 through 10. It has an Annex A. Annex A is a list of controls, and it's a reference annex. In other words, you don't have to comply with all of the controls, you don't have to implement all of the controls, but you have to identify which of the controls you have chosen to implement, which you haven't, why you haven't, where you haven't, and you have to provide appropriate data about what you've done. But I'm going to come to Annex A shortly. So in clauses 4 through 10, the requirements clauses of the standard, this is the clauses that say you shall do X and you shall do Y. The changes are in, first of all, clause 4 and 5, which deal with context and scope. And the changes really are simple changes in wording, which says you have to identify the relevant requirements of interested parties. It used to just be identify the requirements of interested parties, but of course, interested parties and interested parties would be customers, would be regulators, could be government bodies, could be suppliers. They could have requirements which are not reflected by, are not part of an information security management system. So this is simply tightening up the definition and saying identify the relevant information security relevant requirements of interested parties and determine which of those will be identified through the information security management system and which won't. So that should be documented logically. The information security management system now explicitly includes the processes needed in order to deliver on the requirements of interested parties and the interactions between those processes and the interested parties. So you need to do a much more careful mapping of requirements and of processes, your business processes. It's not a requirement, it's a practical thing to do, is to map your business processes and identify which of those business processes are likely to trigger requirements by interested parties. And the most normal requirements are those that occur around either customer requirements around cybersecurity or more often regulatory and legal requirements around data protection and data privacy. So that's the first area of change. The second is in Clause 6, which deals with planning. And the change again is just specific wording. It says that you always had to identify information security objectives, but now they must be monitored and made available as documented information. So that's an addition to what has to be documented as mandatory documentation. And there's a new clause on planning changes in Clause 6, a subclause which now says that you need to identify changes and you need to manage the way in which you implement the changes to the information security management system. Good organizations would have been doing that anyway. You just need to build that into the processes for your ISMS. Clause 7, the requirements to define who will communicate and the processes for effecting communication have been replaced by a rather more generic requirement, which is simply that you define how you communicate whatever needs to be communicated in respect of the ISMS. So you can reduce the specificity, although there's not a lot of benefit in doing so. You can be slightly broader about defining how you communicate ISMS requirements, activities, and everything within the scope of the ISMS. In terms of the operation of the management system, that's Clause 8, you need to establish criteria for processes to implement the actions identified in Clause 6. That's your planning. You identified what you needed to do in order to achieve the information security objectives of the organization, what processes should be in place, and in particular, you need to specifically identify externally provided processes, products, or services that are relevant to the information security management system rather than just processes generically that are relevant. And so again, it's a tightening up, a greater specificity in terms of how you make sure that externally provided processes, services, and products are clearly identified and clearly linked into the information security management system. In Clause 9 and 10, methods of monitoring, measuring, analyzing and evaluating the effectiveness of the ISMS need to be very much more clearly documented, and changes in the needs and expectations of interested parties needs to be clearly addressed through management review. So very straightforward, really not dramatic changes to the management system itself. Buy a copy of ISO 27001:2022. You can probably even get hold of a redline copy, which makes the changes in the wording very clear. And you're simply going to want to amend the documentation in your own ISMS to reflect the changes in the standard. The bigger changes are in Annex A. And Annex A has been revised to align it with what ISO 27001:2022 covers. And ISO 27001:2022 now has only 93 controls. That's a reduction from 114 that were in ISO 27002:2013. And those controls are grouped into four themes rather than into the 14 clauses that you might be used to. The four themes are organizational, technological, physical, and people. And it simply means that it makes it easier when you're thinking about what controls you might apply to deal with a particular area of risk. If you're dealing with organizational risk, there are 37 controls specifically to select from. It makes it much easier for you to identify which controls interact with one another, support one another, and help you reduce either likelihood or impact of an identified threat. There are a number of completely new controls. I've listed those on the right-hand side of the slide as you look at it. Threat intelligence, information security for the use of cloud services. I'll come back to that when we talk a bit about scope statement for the certificate. ICT readiness for business continuity, physical security monitoring, configuration management, information deletion. Again, there's a specific link there to personal data protection regimes such as GDPR. As for data masking and data leakage prevention, there's a link to PCI where data masking is concerned, monitoring activities and web filtering and secure coding. And secure coding reflects obviously some of the attack vectors selected by today's cyber criminals who recognize that being able to put ransomware into a code update is a very neat way to get into an awful lot of organizations in a way that they will find difficult to deal with. So a number of completely new controls. You'll have to think about A, whether they're applicable or not, and B, if they're applicable, how you will go about applying them, obviously to what kind of risk. So that's the first set of changes. 93 controls from 114, the introduction of about 8 new controls specifically, and all of those controls organized in 4 themes rather than in the 14 clauses. The other big change is that controls now have 5 attributes linked to them, and that's driven by the same logic as puts the controls into 4 themes. And it's designed to enable you to think about categorizing controls in relation to specific risks. So the first attribute is control type. Is it a preventive, detective, or corrective control? A preventive control is designed to prevent something happening. A detective control is also designed to reduce likelihood because it's detecting something as it's happening, but it could also have a role in reducing impact, because if you can detect something early on, you can respond more quickly and therefore the impact will be lessened. And corrective, which is quite clearly correcting something so that it doesn't happen again. So preventive, detective, corrective, control type, information security properties, are we dealing with confidentiality, integrity, or availability? Very helpful in terms of dealing with your information security risk assessment, which is typically looking at threats to C, I, and or A. Enables you to think about the way in which a specific control helps you deal with reducing the likelihood or impact in respect of each one of those properties. Linkages to cybersecurity concepts such as identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover, dealing with the logic of cybersecurity defense in depth. And cybersecurity defense in depth is really built around identifying, protecting, detecting, responding, and recovering from attacks. And cybersecurity defense in depth is the only way in which an organization today can effectively deal with the complex, sophisticated types of attacks which we have to deal with. Operational capabilities such as governance, asset management, that enables you to much more easily determine who might own the implementation and maintenance monitoring of a particular control. And then security domains, lastly. Is this a control which fits into a governance domain or into a protection or defense or resilience domain? So all of those attributes are designed to enable you to get a much better linkage between the management system and business as usual, and the way in which the whole organization is designed to operate. So really helpful, useful change in ISO 27002. As I said, you don't have to implement ISO 27002. ISO 27002 is a guidance standard. What you have to do is identify which of the controls in Annex A, and therefore you need to understand what the controls in Annex A are. You have to determine which of those you have implemented, and you have to, for those that you've not implemented, explain why they're not appropriate, and have to, for the controls you have implemented, set out how you've implemented them. So if you're implementing ISO 27001, what does ISO 27001:2022 mean to you? If you're starting today, what do you need to think about? Well, when I put these slides together, Most certification bodies were at that point unlikely to offer certification to ISO 27001:2022 for probably 6 months after the standards publication, in other words, by April 2023. Some standards bodies, PJR, for instance, are ready to certify now. Well-organized certification bodies, able to deal with certification registration ahead of the timetable. But whatever route you choose commercially, ISO 27001:2013 will not be retired for 3 years. So not until the end of October 2025. Usefully, ISO 27002:2022 has an annex that compares its controls with the ones in ISO 27002:2013. And that means that it's very easy for you to create an Annex A that links to whichever direction you wanted to the controls in the other standard in a way that enables you to explain what you have implemented and what you haven't implemented. So you could, for instance, simply take an ISO 27002 Annex A, map it to the controls in Annex A 27030 and say, that's how we comply. This is what we've implemented, and that's the end of the story. You don't need to do anything more complex than that. Whatever happens, you will need to transition to comply with 2022 by October, the end of October 2025. That's a mandatory global Internet Accreditation Forum requirement. So if you're already certified, it kind of follows on from what I've already said, that the first thing you need to do is recognize you've got 3 years to make the change. So there's a commercial decision about when you transition. It's not as challenging as if you're starting off, because if you're starting for the first time, you've got to decide, am I going to do 2013 or 2022? If I'm going to do 2022, there might not be many organizations who can provide support. There might not be a lot of tools and training available. From IT governance, of course, you know, you'd expect us to be first in the game. But if you're transitioning, you've got 3 years. So that means there's no rush. You can afford to make the decision on the basis of what your commercial priorities are. Are there, for instance, commercial benefits in being the first in your sector, the first in a region, the first in a particular industry to proclaim you've achieved ISO 27001:2022 certification? There might not be. You might want to take your time. You might want to give yourself time to think through how you're going to go about implementing the new controls, what your transition might look like. More challenging for large organizations ones, because large organizations will have complex control implementations that might flow across multiple teams, and so working out how to make the transition could be more complex. But you can make a timetable decision on the basis of what your commercial realities are. Once you've worked that out, check whether, or as you're working it out, check whether there's an opportunity to make a transition earlier than 3 years away. If, for instance, you have a existing management system certification due to expire between today and the end of October 2025, you can make a decision that actually you'll take advantage of that and you'll make your transition so that your renewal certification will be to ISO 27001:2022 rather than 2013. But again, that's a commercial decision. What can we actually manage in time? You've got to negotiate with your certification body to be able to do that. One advantage of implementing the new controls is that they're identifiable by attributes, so it's much easier to focus your selections around what you are trying to do in terms of confidentiality, integrity, availability, much easier to look at how those controls are going to fit very broadly into the rest of your management system. And all of those, the implementation of ISO 27001, because of the ISO 27002 control structure, might make it easier for you to look at how you're going about meeting a much broader range of compliance obligations. And so you could get from an early implementation, an early transition to ISO 27001:2022, a number of other benefits across your broader compliance environment. We increasingly in IT governance are talking to our clients about ISO 27001 as the spearhead, the framework for a cyber resilience, cyber defense in depth, general data protection, data privacy, et cetera, compliance demonstration. Because it's such a solid standard in its latest iteration, ISO 27001 is an extraordinarily powerful way to demonstrate to all stakeholders the breadth and depth of the way in which the organization has gone about meeting its broad range of obligations. How do you create a transition strategy? What does a transition strategy look like? Starting point, as I said, is bear in mind that you could start off today, simply implement an ISO 27001 2013 management system. You've got 3 years, having done that, to make the transition to 27001 2022. It won't be very painful to do. Yes, you're going to need to update management system documentation to reflect particularly the clause 6 changes, but the other minor changes elsewhere to clauses 4, 5, 7, 9, 8, 9, and 10, but they're very minor. You can make them, they're straightforward. Certainly the big job is your statement of applicability has to be amended to map the 2013 controls to the 2022 controls. That's easy to do. You don't have to work that out for yourself because the ISO Joint Committee has already done that. And any time before transition, you can implement controls from ISO 27002. As long as you map them to an existing 27001 Annex A, you don't have to make the transition. So you could, as part of your continual improvement, start implementing ISO 27002 2022 controls anytime over the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months. Keep mapping them to an existing ISO 27001 2013 Annex A. And then at the point that you're ready to make the overall transition, you can just simply swap the two annexes around in a way that enables you to go, okay, now we want to get certification to the 2022 version of the standard. So there's a number of ways in which you can put together a transition strategy so that it doesn't have to be big bang. It can be done just as part of business as usual. So what are the different ways in which we can help you do that? What might you turn to for support and help? And of course, the logical way, a place to be thinking about ISO 27001 is to go back to your risk assessment. And if you're starting off on the ISO 27001 journey, risk assessment is really where you start. The logic of ISO 27001 is that you are trying to establish a risk management framework, a governance, risk management, compliance framework that is going to work across the whole of an organization. Yes, you can limit scope to meet a specific set of client or regulatory requirements, but the real benefit of ISO 27001 comes from a cross-organization implementation. So typically you'll have a formal risk assessment, deploying a formal risk assessment methodology that might be reflective of ISO 27005 or of the NIST risk assessment framework. But fundamentally, you're going to have a risk scale, a risk appetite, and you're going to have a methodology which is capable of demonstrating consistent results so that whoever does the risk assessment will arrive at the same kind of determinations. It's not going to be dependent on subjective judgment of individuals. You're going to identify risks in respect of how they impact confidentiality, integrity, availability. You'll analyze them to work out which threats and vulnerabilities apply to each of the critical assets that you're dealing with. And you'll look at whether or not there's a threat that can exploit a vulnerability, and you'll then evaluate the impact on the organization if it does. That enables you then to think about what type of control are we going to put in place to reduce likelihood or to reduce impact to a level of acceptability. Remember that NIA is not about eliminating risk, it's about reducing it to a level acceptable to you as an organization, which the likelihood organization. So core of your ISO 27001 do continue to be a risk assessment. And so you'll probably want to be aware of the fact that ISO 27005 has also been updated. It's not a mandatory standard. It's a useful place to go for support and assistance. You might want to be thinking about the way in which you can address that. And logically, you might look at ISO 27001 transition training courses. So we offer, for instance, a training course which is designed to help people make a transition from an existing 2013 lead implementer, lead auditor, internal auditor qualification to one which is in line with 2022. You can book now to go on a 2022 lead implementer or lead auditor training course and go on that within the next month or so. We can help you do an ISO 27001, much more of a tailored gap analysis, particularly useful if you're thinking about how you might address this, what your project might look like. You might simply think about what does the transition need to look like and say, I want a 2022 gap analysis on my existing ISMS. Or you might get us to come and implement a fast track where we basically do the job for you. We consult with you, but fundamentally we implement the management system for you. So there's a number of ways in which IT governance can help with what you're trying to achieve. And that, ladies and gentlemen, brings me to the end of what I was planning to say in terms of the way you might approach your ISO 27001 transition. So that means that if you have questions, we're very happy to deal with them. And there's a number of ways you can get in touch with us to follow up, but most usefully, hopefully, if you have questions that arise from this or any related matter, please do put them into the chat. If there are any, Amy will pick them up, share them with them, and I'll attempt to answer them.
Absolutely. Let me go ahead and open that up right now, and we'll see if we've got anything from our curious audience to answer. All right, let me see what we've got here. Okay, to those who are asking about the availability of the presentation after the broadcast has ended, the slides and the recording will both be available for your review. The slides will be downloadable from the pjr.com website, and the recording, including the full voiceover and the Q&A here, will be on the PJR YouTube channel, usually within 24 to 48 hours, depending on how long it takes to download and process the video recording. All right, let me see then what questions we've got here. Some compliments for you, Alan, on the thorough presentation. All right, we've got a query here from Claire. Claire's not sure if the question may be applicable to the webinar, but Claire says, I've just been asked a question about NIS2 directives in the EU, and specifically whether this affects our current ISO certification. As we're talking about the ISO, I thought I would ask, but don't worry if it's not appropriate for this session.
Sure, so NIS2 is as you obviously will be aware, is an advance on NIS1 in terms of requirements for critical natural infrastructure. ISO 27001, there is not a specific requirement in NIS2 to make the transition quickly or immediately. I would approach ISO 27001 2022 from the perspective of how do you fit a transition there into your NIS2 compliance. And I'd be looking at the attributes of controls and looking at which of those controls are very specifically NIS2 linked. And there are a number which quite clearly will link into the NIS2 requirements. And I'd be planning my transition so that it's part of how I transition to NIS2. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, Claire, if you have any further follow-up questions, do let us know. Just as a follow-up in general to anyone, if you're looking into things as things develop, we do have another session of this same style webinar, the briefing about the transition of 27001 2022. We have another session scheduled for March 23rd, so a month from today. You're more than welcome to join us for that webinar as well. We may rehash some of the same information, but there may also be new details as anything develops or we learn more about the transition. Bob is asking about the availability of the presentation. Yeah, again, Bob, thank you for your question. The slides will be available from the pjr.com website and the recording will be on the PJR YouTube channel. In addition, I mentioned our other ISO 27001 transition webinar. We do also have, for those who are curious or interested, tomorrow we are hosting a 27701 webinar with John Laffey, who is our basically our IT guru here at PJR. He's very busy, so we're lucky we got him on for a webinar. You're all more than welcome to join us for that as well tomorrow at 11 Eastern time. The link to register should be on the PJR website. If you go to the training tab in the menu at the top of the webpage, it should drop down to upcoming webinars or webinars, and the link to register will be on that page as well. All right, we've got a question here from Nigel. Nigel asks, just to confirm, the statement of applicability can be amended with the 2022 controls, which are also listed in 27,002. Is that correct?
So for a 2022 certification, you're going to need to replace your existing Annex A with an Annex A which lists only the ISO 27,002 controls. What you can do, quite simply, because in ISO 27,002, those are maps to the existing 27,013 controls, is you can simply go, here is an Annex A which will by definition comply, and you can link to the controls that you have in place, and you can go, these are already implemented. And the new controls, you can simply say, we haven't yet implemented because we don't have a threat for a vulnerability which needs us to implement them. And you will then have immediately an ISO 27001 2022 compliant Annex A. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, Nigel, if you need any more clarification, please do let us know. And if anyone else has other questions, please shoot them over. We have plenty of time here at the end of the session to address any questions, comments, concerns you might have. But just in general, Alan, do you have any predictions for the next month, what we might see, if anything new, or anything we could share on the next session?
Yeah, sure. So I think there are a number of improvements coming through as certification bodies get to grips with their own implementation timetables. But I think for most organizations, I want to pick up on the comments about NIS2. The real thing to be thinking about isn't just so much how do I make the transition to ISO 27001 2022. It's really how do I make ISO 27001 of our governance, risk management, and compliance program. One of the things you can do with ISO 27001 is you can add into the scope of the management system other management standards. So a standard like ISO 27701, which Amy, you mentioned, is a standard for a personal information management system. It can only be certificated for organizations who have ISO 27001. But what it does is demonstrate that you have put in place all of the procedures and processes necessary to comply with a broad range of privacy regulations. And you could therefore have a management system certificate which says from Perry Johnson, this organization complies with ISO 27001. The scope of compliance is name of the organization, including ISO 27001, full Annex A, and ISO 27701. So you'd have a comprehensive certificate saying that you have ISO 27701 implemented. And you can go further than that. You can, if you're looking at perhaps processing personal data in the cloud or general cybersecurity controls, you could add ISO 27017 or 27018, which are also guidance standards in the family, into your overall scope, integrate them into your management system, have your certification body carry out an audit that includes them, and you've then got a really comprehensive scope statement and a really comprehensive management system, which goes, you know, further and further to help stakeholders recognize the value of your management system. And over the next probably 12 or 18 months, we expect to see more and more organizations recognizing that their management system shouldn't just be a tick box. It shouldn't just be something which is part of meeting clients' requirements. You have to have ISO 27001 to be on our bid list. But it becomes a key part of making sure that as an organization, you're never in the headlines because of you had a ransomware attack, they broke in 6 months ago and you didn't find out about it. And now you've got everything down for the next 2 weeks while you try and figure out what to do, try and bolt the door after the horse is bolted. You put yourself in a place where you're just not going to be that organization. And that makes the investment in ISO 27001 and related standards, getting it right, doing it really thoroughly, so worthwhile because it becomes the bedrock for an organization to thrive in an environment where cybercrime, data protection are going to become, we kind of say there's only three things in life which are certain these days, death, taxes, and cybercrime. And you've got to approach cybercrime and therefore ISO 27001 from that perspective.
Great. Thanks, Alan. We've got another question here from Nigel. Nigel asks, what did you say was the best way to show continual improvement as we work on our transition?
So the simple logical way to do that, you have an ISO 27001 2013 Annex A with all 114 controls. That's cool. You look at the controls in 2022, and the first thing I'd suggest you do is look at which of those controls map exactly to controls in Annex A that you currently have. And I would just simply make the amendments. I would say this control is now implemented, is now mapped to, remember Annex A is a reference control set, we're now mapping it to this control in 2022. That's a bit straightforward. There are then some controls where the guidance in 2022 is different, or it's one of the new controls in 2022. And you could choose from an implementation point of view, assuming that you've been able to identify a threat, vulnerability, and an asset to which they relate, you go, okay, this specific control, secure coding, for instance, is applicable to these assets, this process. We're going to implement it in June. Here's our plan for implementing it. And when we implement it, we'll update Annex A. At that point, we'll say Annex A now maps to this control in 2022, and here's the implementation detail. So that you step by step produce a mapping from ISO 27 2013 to 2022, where gradually all of your 2013 controls are mapped to a 2022 control. When the job is complete, you just simply swap it around. You go, okay, we're now going to drop the 2013 Annex A. We're going to replace it with a numbered 2022 Annex A. Job done.
All right, great. I've got a question for you here from Mona. Mona is asking, which of the new controls do you think is most relevant to start with if you'd like to avoid risk in today's risk landscape?
Well, that's where my answer is. ISO 27001 is a control. It's a control against the likelihood of any one of the huge range of cybercrime, cyber threats out there exploiting the huge range of vulnerabilities inside your organization with the impact that you could go out of business. So the simple answer is you implement ISO 27001. Inside ISO 27001, which controls, because there will be controls, not one control, that you would prioritize will be driven by the either the asset that you prize most or by the biggest exposures that you have. And that's where the kind of risk assessment you need is comes that you need to do for your own organization. You look at, you know, what are our crown jewels? What will kill us if we lose, if they're compromised? And then you think about how you protect those and you select the controls to protect those.
All right, thank you for that. We've got a question here from Tim regarding risk. Tim wonders, what's the best way to link ISO 27001 risks to enterprise risks? He says, enterprise risk often bats away low-value risks.
Sure. So the rewriting of ISO 27005 is specifically done so that it links to ISO 31000. ISO 31000 is the enterprise level risk management framework. It's very generic. ISO 27005 has now been redrafted so that it maps perfectly to that. So that's the first thing to be aware of. The second thing to say is, of course, whether it's enterprise level or information security management level, it's a management decision as to what you do with low level risks. There's no obligation on you to control a low level information security risk. None whatsoever. The whole point about setting clearly management risk appetite is because that enables you to objectively say, well, management said low-level risks they're not concerned about, so we're applying no controls to them. And that, from an ISO 27001 point of view, is a perfectly legitimate and not unusual approach for an organization to take. So practically speaking, it should be very easy for you, both from a standard interaction point of view, as well as from a practical management and operational point of view, to deal with low-level risks.
All right. Thanks for that question there. We've got a question from Matt. Matt would like to know, Alan, what's your preferred setup for the documentation for 27001 2022, such as the ISMS manual, SOA, and Annex A as separate documents?
From a technical point of view, there is a small number of documents which are mandatory. What we would normally recommend to clients to do is to have a comprehensive suite of documents, though, which include the mandatory documents, because you want to be able to manage consistently processes across the whole of the management system. So I would probably look for a way in which I can get integration between, and I'd preferably use software to do risk assessment. I'd look for a way in which I could link my risk assessment to my documentation, preferably have the risk assessment output the statement of applicability. When I update my risk assessment, I'd want it to automatically update my statement of applicability. I'd want my statement of applicability to automatically link to the relevant procedure documents in my management system. So I kind of look for an automated solution that enables me to do all of those things. I'd want to see documentation available to all of the staff who need to see it. So in some PDF format, some of the documentation needs to be available to third parties, obviously. I'd want the risk assessment information to be available to my risk assessment risk owners. I'd want it to be available at a kind of dashboard level to management so that they can see how the various risks are being dealt with. I don't know whether that answers your question at all.
Yeah, Matt, if you have any further follow-up questions, please do let us know. We've got another follow-up question or request for clarification, Alan, from Nigel again. Nigel was hoping if you could clarify the transition period. He says there was mention that we must begin transition October this year, but we have until October 2025. Is this correct?
Okay, so the requirement is that certification bodies must have themselves transitioned their certification capability to ISO 27001:2022 by October 2025. That's certification bodies. So that's PJR and so on. So they have to be able to provide by then certification to ISO 27001:2022. You as an organization with an information security management system, you have 3 years to make the transition. So the requirement for CBs to make the transition is so that if you want to go more quickly, if you want to get a 2022 certificate within the first 12 months, the CB must have made the transition and be ready to do that. But you don't have to. You've got 3 years to make the transition. So you can plan it from in terms of what's going to suit your own commercial and business requirements and do it in the timetable that works best for you. Of course, you've got to agree that with your CB because they've got to do the audits, they've got to do all that kind of stuff, but you've got 3 years. And at the end of that 3 years, you have to have made the transition. And we would normally say, don't wait, because there will be a number of people who do. And so there will be a cram in the last few months of people desperately trying to get it done. It's always sensible to make sure you get certification done ahead of the deadline.
Absolutely. Nigel, hopefully that was clarifying enough. If you do have any more follow-up questions, let us know. I don't see any other new questions in the questions box, so we'll start wrapping up. Again, for those who either joined us late or if you wanted to share this presentation with someone, we will have the slides available on the PGR website, and the recording will be on our YouTube channel as usual, completely free for you to review or share as you wish. I'm not seeing any other hands go up or questions come in, so I think we can wrap things up for today. Alan, thank you again so much once again for a very comprehensive presentation and great answers to questions. We always love having a good dynamic Q&A with the audience. So I'll leave it at that. Hopefully we'll see some of you tomorrow on our 27701 webinar here at PJR. And if you have any follow-up questions, maybe you hear some news throughout the next month and you want to join us for our subsequent 27001 transition webinar with Alan, we would love to see you all on that as well. But any parting words of wisdom, Alan, before we sign off for the day?
Well, the obvious one, which is that cybercrime is getting more and more serious. So don't let finance teams worry about whether we should be spending money or not, get in the way of making sure you don't have to spend on dealing with the consequences of not having adequate security in place. ISO 27001 is the way to demonstrate to stakeholders, including your finance team, that you've got cyber security and data protection compliance licked. So get on with it. Be practical, make it work for you.
All right, be practical and make it work. That's a great philosophy to go by. I wish everyone a safe and happy rest of your week. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the next webinar.
Bye-bye.